And challenge is always one aspect of high performance. Just think of Olympic athletes. They're always trying to perform at a higher level, beating a time, jumping farther, running faster. Those challenges are inherent in doing our best. You as a leader either have to challenge the process, or when there is external challenges, have to find a way to respond to it if you're going to perform at a higher level.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and happy Christmas, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and welcome to episode 64 of the show, which is the last episode for 2021, and it's the last episode of season 3. I'm also extremely excited about this episode, and I am delighted to bring you an interview with one of my leadership heroes, Jim Kouzes. Jim Kouzes is the co-author with Barry Posner of the award-winning and best-selling book, The Leadership Challenge, now in its sixth edition with over 2.8 million copies sold worldwide. The Leadership Challenge was selected by Soundview Executive Book Summaries and one of the best leadership books of all time. Named one of the 100 best business books of all time by 800 CEO Read. It was chosen by Fast Company as one of the 2012 best business books of the year and has been on the Wall Street Journal bestseller list multiple times. There are many more accolades and awards for the book than I have time to share with you. And I also use the research from this book at the start of every single leadership program that I run. I really am a huge fan of Jim Kouzes and the research he's done with his co-author Barry Posner. As well as writing one of the best leadership books that's out there, in my humble opinion, Jim is also an experienced executive. He served as president, then CEO and chairman of the Tom Peters Company from 1988 until 2000. Prior to his tenure at TPC, he directed the Executive Development Center at Santa Clara University from 1981 through to 1987. In this episode, we explore what he has learned about leadership from a life dedicated to the topic. I was also so grateful to be able to ask Jim many of the questions that occurred to me as I read and reread and reread the book over the past 8 years or so, really focusing with him on how we can practically apply some of the lessons and learnings from his research. I know that you're going to absolutely love this episode, but before we get into it, let me just share an offer with you. As you probably know from previous episodes, I'm giving away complimentary access to my online weekly planning protocol course. In order to access it, I say simply, but actually it's not all that simple, to review the show on Apple Podcasts. But if you could review the show on Apple Podcasts and then take a screenshot and send it over to me by email to chat@ben-morton.com, then we will reply to you, giving you your access code for the program. And as I said, it's not always that obvious how to review a podcast on Apple Podcasts. So we've included a link in the show notes that you can click on. Then you simply need to scroll down to the bottom of that page and click on the leave a review button. But let's get back to this episode. And without any further delay, please, please enjoy this fascinating conversation with a genuine thought leader, Jim Kouzes. Jim, a very warm welcome to the podcast. We're just chatting off air there, and I am so excited and feel honored to have you on the show. So welcome.
Ben, thank you. It's really a pleasure talking with you. Nice to do this live.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jim, can we dive straight in and ask what listeners will now be very, very familiar with as the first question that I ask every single guest? which is, what does leadership mean to you?
Ben, there are hundreds of definitions, as you know, but Barry and I have developed a very specific definition, and each word in this definition means something. So we define leadership as the art of mobilizing others to want to struggle for shared aspirations. We chose art because leadership is a performing art. You do it in front of or with other people. Mobilizing because it's about movement, getting people going in a particular direction. Others, obviously, because it's not just about yourself and what you do, but about getting others mobilized. Want to, because the best leadership is one in which people, in a sense, offer voluntary commitment to what they're doing. They want to be there. They don't just have to be there. Struggle, which is often a word that people key in on because they wonder, why should it be a struggle? If you look at the history of exemplary leadership, and our research demonstrates this, leadership involves challenge and adversity. And if people aren't willing to go through that, struggle with that, then you won't have the kind of results that exemplary leaders expect and their constituents expect. And share it, of course, because it is an experience that others share with you, that's something in common with others, and aspirations, because we're talking about something bigger, hopes, dreams, and ambitions. So art of mobilizing others to want to struggle for shared aspirations is how we define it.
I love that. I don't think I'd heard that definition from you and Barry before, but I'd love to just ask you a little bit more about the art word, actually. And here we are going off piece straight away on the questions, which is becoming more and more common for me. I mean, I often find myself saying to people, leadership is more art than science. And that tends to be when people are pushing me for a very black and white answer, or searching for a very black and white answer. And in my experience, there rarely is a black and white answer in leadership. But I'd just love to know a little bit more about kind of why you put sort of that word art in there and your view on that.
Well, it's also unusual for us, Ben, because we do a lot of research and we collect a lot of quantitative, not just qualitative data, not just a lot of stories, but we analyze statistics to look at the impact leaders have on others. So we need to differentiate between that kind of science, which demonstrates that a particular practice or behavior has an impact on other people, whether it's being clear about your values and beliefs, or having a vision of the future, or being able to engage with other people in such a way that they feel more powerful and efficacious. Those kind of behaviors we look at to determine if they, in fact, improve people's performance, keep it the same, or have a negative impact. So that's the science part of leadership. But the actions of leaders are ones they take with other people. Now, some of them, of course, are mental, envisioning something. But if it's just in your head and you don't convey that to other people, communicate that to other people, then it's just in your head. And so you have to perform that. You have to articulate it in public with other people. So that part is an art part. It's much like an actor on a stage, or you and I in communication like this, or a person in a group of people engaging in a conversation. That's an art part. And it's a performing art. It's not like painting a picture on a canvas or taking a photograph. It really is about doing it with other people.
And I guess this is a brilliant segue into looking at one of the characteristics that your research has consistently found that people look for in an admired leader, right? Because whilst it's a performing art, we are performing our own character, right? Because I think I'm right in saying that honesty has always been the number one thing that constituents or followers have said they're looking for an admired leader. So I guess we have to make sure we are performing true to ourselves, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, when we do our research and we look at that preference for honesty, we use some synonyms or some common words that tend to accompany it, like integrity, trustworthiness, has character. And so people, in order to be viewed as honest, which is the number one quality people look for and admire in a leader, in our research and others as well, it is about being true to yourself, being true to your values and beliefs, making sure that you're clear about those.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the questions I often get asked when I'm talking about your research is, well, what does honesty really mean? Or how do I ensure that I really demonstrate that particular characteristic consistently? Because I think we would all like to think we are honest. And when people see that or read that, I see lots of kind of nods in agreement. I think, yes, I'm honest. But it's about a lot more than simply telling the truth and not telling a lie, right?
It is. So just a little bit of background on how we constructed the tool we use, the survey we use in asking people what they look for and admire in a leader, and how honest and ended up at the top of the list. So we began, Ben, when we were doing this research, by asking an open-ended question, very simply. What do you look for and admire in a leader, someone whose direction you would willingly follow? Going back to our definition of leadership, we want people to follow this person. So if you were going to willingly follow somebody, what do you want in that person? And we got hundreds of words, characteristics, qualities, behaviors in response to that question. And in looking through those, you can't ask a survey, what do you look for and admire in a leader, and select seven of these if you have 150 on the list. So we took the words that we got from, like, integrity, trustworthiness, has character, trusting, and put them all into a category we called honest. And so it's all those words, in a sense, people are reacting to when they select honest. And we did that with 19 other qualities as well, which we put in our survey called characteristics of an admire leader. So when people are selecting honest, they're not just thinking about tells the truth, but they're also thinking about these other kinds of qualities that are associated with it, such as trustworthiness, integrity, character, has a good moral compass, those kinds of synonyms that go with the word.
Yeah. And Jim, are all sort of 19 of the characteristics sort of equally as broad, or is the honest characteristic slightly broader? And if so, do you think that's what's behind the fact that for, is it 35 years since the first round of research has meant it's consistently the number one thing? Is it to breadth, or is it just what people really, really look for in an admired leader, do you think?
Yeah, we started this research, actually, the origins are in the late 70s, but Barry and I connected in the early 80s, in 81, 82, and we started to explore this. We found we had a common interest in values and beliefs. And this was one of the questions that we asked, what do you look for and admire in a leader, in other research related to values and beliefs. So it goes back actually to the early 80s. We published the first results in 87.
Wow. Okay. And Jim, I wanted to ask you about one of the other characteristics that's, I think, continued to be in the top four, which for me seems to be perhaps the less obvious one, and the one when I'm sharing your research, people tend to ask the most questions around, which is competent. So again, in the context of your research, what are we talking about in terms of that characteristic?
Again, looking at some of the synonyms that we used in order to come to that conclusion, from our survey, competent was also associated with words like capable, proficient, effective, gets the job done, professional. So that group of words associated with the keyword competent was what people were looking at when they made the selection. And it really has to do with competence in leadership, not so much a technical competence. It's not about whether you're a competent engineer or financial administrator or a manufacturer or an accountant or a marketing person, but whether do you have the leadership capacity to make things happen, to get things done. That's what people were responding to when they thought about competent as something we're looking for. It makes sense. It's one thing to have a set of values and beliefs, something that you can be true to, something that people, when they hear that you believe in certain things, they can hold you accountable for acting on those and feel that you're trustworthy and have integrity around your values and beliefs. But it's another to have the ability to enact something. Just as an example, let's say that you believe in, and you truly, truly believe in quality. You advocate for that in your organization. You talk about it. You speak about how we have to have total quality in this organization. Or it could be collaborative, or it could be innovativeness. Any of those words that you might believe in, you want to be true to. But if you don't have the capability, or the people who you're working with on your team don't have the capability, the competence to enact that, then you won't be successful. So it's honest and competent in some ways go together. And in fact, in other research we've done on credibility, that is the believability of a leader, those words show up again as trustworthiness and expertise. And classic research on believability of a source of information has to do with those two qualities, trustworthiness and expertise, which is very similar to what we call honest and competent.
Yeah, so just to, I guess for the listeners and for my own benefit, just to make sure I'm really clear about what you've just said. So actually, if we are, through our actions as a leader, if we're giving people the perception at least that we are not competent in something that we say is really important, not only are we sort of damaging how competent people perceive us, but we're also damaging the degree to which they think we're honest, right? Because they've heard us say this is important, but we're not perhaps following through and demonstrating that. So they're left there questioning, well, is quality really important to you? Because I see this mismatch between actions and words. Is that fair?
That's exactly correct. Another common phrase that's often used in association with that notion of credibility is put your money where your mouth is. And so if you're advocating for quality, just as one example, and you're not putting the resources into developing the capacity to be quality, to have the tools to measure it, then you're not actually exercising believability. You're not being believable to other people. Well, I hear you say this, but you know, there's no budget for this. There's no resources for this. You're not spending any time on this. I don't really believe you.
Yeah. And Jim, whilst we're talking about competence here, I've just sort of done a big sigh of relief and wiped my brow, because I've spent many years kind of describing competence and saying to people, it's more about competence as a leader than being sort of a functional expertise. And yes, the functional expertise is important, but it's more about the broad leadership. And I'm so pleased I've got that right. And you've just, you just said so.
You certainly do. You know, and Ben, it goes back to something that I know you share, which is that leadership is a set of skills and abilities. It's not just qualities. So quality is a way of us attributing to a leader certain attributes, certain values and beliefs. But if you don't have the skills and abilities to execute on those, then you won't become an exemplary leader, or a credible leader. And so by implication, the notion of competence implies that there is a set of skills and abilities that go with leadership. It's not just something you're born with, something that you have. It is something you develop.
Yeah, which I guess comes back to this, how they all link together, in so much as we've got to want to willingly follow the leader and be inspired and motivated by the vision that they share. But at the same time, we're only going to follow them if we believe they're competent and have got the skills to get us there. Otherwise, we're potentially following them on a fool's errand.
Yes, absolutely. And our credibility is at stake also. And if we're in an organization that advocates for, preaches about, hopes to achieve a certain set of values and beliefs, and we don't have the individual skills and abilities or the resources to execute on that, it's our competence that's going to be questioned as well, and our credibility.
And Jim, there was a particular thing from the last round of research, I believe, that stood out for me when I looked at all of the characteristics. And I think I saw that there was just 3% of people that said they wanted their leader to be self-controlled. So again, can you tell us what, in terms of your research definition, we mean by self-controlled in this context? And why do you think that's so low? I found that one really intriguing. So I was desperate to ask you what you think is going on there.
Well, just go back to how we conducted the research, to be fair.
Yeah.
We gave people a list of 20 characteristics along with several 4 to 5 synonyms to go with that word, as we talked about earlier, related to honest. Mm-hmm. And so they were given 20 categories, and we said, select the 7 you most look for and admire in a leader.
Yeah.
All of these have been mentioned as things people want in a leader. But of these 20, which 7 are most important to you? And so self-controlled was low on the list by virtue of the fact it wasn't selected as frequently as the others. What are people saying to us? Well, when I'm forced to make a choice about what I most want in a leader, self-control doesn't come up on the list. I will tolerate somebody who may be overly enthusiastic and not always thoughtful about their choice of words, or acts in an unrestrained way and has this unrestrained optimism and lacks temperance. Some entrepreneurs are like that. And people don't select that word as one of their top seven.
Yeah, I almost wondered if it's partly because it would seem to be at least sort of potentially the opposite to honesty. If we feel someone is really controlling, hiding some of their true thoughts and feelings, or trying to really dial down some of their enthusiasm, therefore, are they sort of masking some of their true self and true sort of personality traits? So therefore, is it to a degree, the opposite of honesty?
You know, I like that observation. And if you think more deeply about it, and you're just saying this for the first time to me, no one has ever said it quite that way. But as I think about it, you know, if I'm so self-controlled, I will have difficulty being inspiring. I'll have difficulty communicating in a way that communicates enthusiasm. Boring is not a quality people look for in leaders.
Yeah.
And if I'm so self-controlled that I come across as boring and no affect, that could dampen the sense that I really don't believe in what I say because I'm not enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, and I think where it came from for me, Jim, which I might have shared in some other episodes of the podcast with listeners, is that if you look at a sort of StrengthsFinder or StrengthsScope profile, personally, one of my highest strengths is emotional control, which I guess is very similar to this self-control. And I think that's a trait I learned as a small child growing up, kind of when my parents were arguing and wanting to sort of not let them know I was worried. I went to school and I was told I was calm and steady, and school said I'd make a good leader. And I wanted to join the military from a young age, and then I went to our Royal Military Academy, and almost sort of being calm and steady was rewarded and recognized. It was just constantly reinforced and reinforced in me as something that was good. And then one day I was working with my coach and also a very, very good friend. And suddenly she said to me, said, "Ben, you talk a lot about sort of dropping the mask, dropping the work mask." She said, "How about you drop yours from time to time?" She said, "If you really want to connect with people," she said, "you need to let people in." She said, "As much as I know you, sometimes I don't know what you're thinking, how you feel about something. I just often don't know what's going on." And that's kind of where it came from for me. So I think there is this balance, right, between being competent, calm and steady and allowing people to see the real you, I think.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Jim, do you have any thoughts or perhaps a working hypothesis around what COVID might do to your research? Is there another round kind of in progress or coming? And how do you think COVID might change it?
Yes, there is more research in process. We are currently working on the 7th edition of the Leadership Challenge. And in that process, we are taking another look at both the characteristics of admired leaders and the 5 practices of exemplary leadership. So yes, that is in process. We have some preliminary results which do indicate that the top 2 of honest and competent,
right,
are still the top 2 that have been historically there. And interestingly enough, about the same percentage. Right now they're showing up at 84 for honest and 65% for competent, which is about what they have been.
Okay.
83 to 87, 88% for honest and in the mid-60s for competent. So historically, those have been the top 2, and it looks like that's where they will be even during this pandemic period. A couple of the other qualities that show up in the top 7, like forward-looking, while it's still in the top 7, has diminished in its preference. The valence is just lower, and that could potentially be due to the fact that right now everything seems immediate, urgent. You got to do things right now, this moment, to make sure we mitigate this, the COVID pandemic. And so that may be an explanation for why that has fallen a bit.
Okay.
Supportive has increased somewhat. Previously was down the list in the top 7. Now it's looks like maybe four or five. That may also be due to the fact that people, when there's great adversity, stress, and concern about themselves and their family, their health and well-being, that people want to see more supportiveness from leaders. So we'll see where those shake out by the end of the time we finished our research. But what I think what's important for all of us is that honest and competent have remained at the top of the list despite what's happening with COVID right now.
Yeah, I think the forward-looking or forward-facing piece seems to make sense. Anecdotally, I know a few of my clients and friends who are sort of MDs and CEOs have said to me countless times over the past 2 years that, like, long-term strategic planning, Ben, that's looking 3 months ahead at the minute. So the forward-facing has become, or the strategic planning has become much more immediate, I think, isn't it? Just kind of like, let's respond, let's react, let's stabilize, let's get through this next period before worrying about what's happening in 3 or 5 years' time.
Yeah, yes. I think that's absolutely going on.
And was there anything in particular that really surprised you, kind of, Jim, when you first started out the research or along this journey? What are some of the things that have stood out for you?
Going back again to the two basic questions that we ask: what do leaders do when they're performing at their best, and what do people look for and admire? Thinking about that first question, what do leaders do when they're performing at their best? What's, I think, important in response to that particular question is that the five practices of exemplary leadership: model the way, inspire a shared vision, challenge the process, enable others to act, and encourage the heart, have also remained robust during this period of time and emerged out of this research on what people said they were doing about their when they were at their best. And so that was one thing that's been constant and consistent. And if I tell you the whole story about how we came up with those five, they emerged from the people we asked a question of. We did not, this is not a model we overlaid on top of what other people were doing and then looked for the data to prove the model.
Got you.
We asked people the question, what are you doing when you're at your best as a leader? And people told us their stories. And in analyzing those stories, these are the five that emerged. We didn't necessarily expect to find those five, and we didn't expect that they'd be as robust today as they were when we first started. The other thing that was important, maybe not surprising when we reflected on it, but when we asked people, what do you do when you're at your best as a leader? Tell us a story about your personal best leadership experience. Challenge was always the condition under which people did their best.
Right.
Now, we didn't ask people to tell us about challenging times. We asked people to tell us about when they did their best. And when we saw that, that was a surprise. But then we reflected on it and read the research by Mahaji Csikszentmihalyi on flow and other people who have done research around high-performing people in general. And challenge is always one aspect of high performance. That is, you have to push yourself beyond where you currently are in order to do your best. Think of Olympic athletes. They're always trying to perform at a higher level, beating a time, jumping farther, running faster. Those challenges are inherent in doing our best. So what's important in that finding for leaders is to recognize that you as a leader either have to challenge the process, or when there is external challenges, have to find a way to respond to it if you're going to perform at a higher level. With regard to the second question, what do you look for and admire in a leader? I think the thing that emerged from that research, and again, at least preliminarily, looks to be the same today, is that credibility is the foundation of leadership. If people don't believe in the messenger, they won't believe the message.
Yeah, I love that quote and that phrase. I've quoted that from the book so many times. I think it's so important. Jim, as you were speaking there, a question was forming in my mind. And as it was forming, I thought this is almost an impossibly broad question. But if we think about the challenge that the COVID-19 pandemic has created, and I guess why I say it's almost an impossibly broad question is because every leader is different, has got different stress tolerances, different levels of experience. Every businesses operating in a slightly different situation. Some businesses have thrived in during the COVID pandemic, others have really struggled. But do you think the degree of challenge which many leaders have faced over the past two years will still enable them to sort of do their best work, and some of those leadership best stories will be people reflecting on how they've responded to COVID? Or do you think the challenge might have pushed so far that it started to push sort of people into on that sort of performance curve when the challenge increases so much, sort of the performance starts dropping off? Like, do you have any thoughts around that?
Well, that's a very important observation, and it's something for all of us to take to heart. COVID has demonstrated that it is highly likely that under very severe adversity, people can innovate and create like crazy. Look at the development of a vaccine for COVID and the quick response when a new variant comes along, and the testing that goes with it, and the interventions that were taken in order to move to work from anywhere. Essentially work from home, work from anywhere. And people had to innovate using technology like that we're using. You know, I did a Zoom meeting now and then. Now it's, you know, almost a daily affair and it is a daily affair for many people who are still working from home or working from something more local and not having to travel to be with a group of people in an office. So, yes, we've demonstrated that we can rise to the occasion. Now, if it sustains itself over a period of time and becomes the new norm, we'll be again tested. You know, people are hoping that eventually it'll go away, we'll go back to, and I think all of us have to keep in mind, you can never go back to 2019. That's past, it's gone. Now we have to adapt to a new scenario, potentially. And that's true for all leadership. So exemplary leaders know that and will continue to rise to the occasion, step up to lead during these kinds of circumstances. Will the majority of people come to that realization? I think so, and begin to adapt. If you look back in the history of humanity, you know, when we've had challenges like this that have sustained themselves over years, we've come through it and we've done better subsequently. They haven't been easy. You think the Great Depression, you think the World Wars. Yes, we have the capacity to do it. Is it going to be easy? Yeah, no. Yeah. That's why struggle's in the definition.
And Jim, again, if we just keep going with this theme, and this wasn't something I planned to ask, it's very much just emerged to me as well. To what degree do you think COVID has really shone a light on those in leadership positions who are leading and can lead, and perhaps shone a light on those in leadership positions who actually weren't leading? Sort of, I sometimes wonder, have there been people in leadership roles in organizations who were perhaps more, perhaps great managers, let's say, if we'd look thinking about the definitions of leadership and management, or perhaps great administrators of a business, but kind of when they've really come under pressure, to what degree have they really been able to lead and keep people moving forward and be supportive and all of that? Do you think it's shone a light on that?
I think it's shone a light on, if you're going back to our original work and the notion of challenge, how becoming an exemplary leader requires one to develop the personal capacity to be resilient and to be able to adapt quickly. And while the behaviors that we talk about don't necessarily communicate that probably as well as we should, we're doing more of that in this new edition, because it is shining a light on the importance of being adaptable, being flexible, being responsive, while at the same time keeping in mind that we want something out there in the future, longer term. It's not just about today. It is also about the future. And I suppose one of the things comes up, and you're asking that question for me, of me, is that when we think about exemplary leadership, I think we have to understand more clearly that we will never get to that more desirable future by dividing each other. We have to come together to make this happen. We can't do anything about climate change or the pandemic or other serious problems that the world faces without coming together, rather than viewing it as a competition and one organization wins and the other loses, or one team wins and the other loses, or one country wins and the other loses. This isn't a competition. This is about our long-term survival as a species, and we need to come together around this. And so I think that's another important thing that this pandemic shines a light on. If we try to divide people, we're not going to solve this problem. It's going to be with us for longer than we want it to be.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's probably quite a nice lead in to perhaps one of the last few questions I'd love to ask you, which is really around sort of values and being clear on your values. I think I heard you say earlier on in our conversation that an interest in beliefs and values is kind of what sort of brought sort of yourself and Barry together in terms of this research. But how much impact do you think being really clear on one's values and what you stand for as a leader, what impact does that have on our ability to lead and the commitment and engagement that we can engender in those that we have the privilege and responsibility to lead?
The research that Barry and I worked on initially before we even thought about writing a book on leadership was on values clarity and shared values make a difference. And one of the things we learned very early on was that the clearer one is about one's personal values, first of all, is directly related to how committed one is to a team and an organization. Interestingly enough, if you think about a 2x2 where you're measuring clear on personal values and clear on organizational values, and then correlating that with the level of commitment you have to the organization. Think about that as four boxes from low to high and low to high on both dimensions. Obviously, the space you want to be in is I'm both clear about my values and clear about the organization's values, and that's where we'll find the highest level of commitment, and that, in fact, is the case. But the second highest level of commitment comes when I'm clear about highly clear about my values, but not always that clear about the organization's. And that was surprising to us when we initially found that you can have the second highest level of commitment when people are clear only about their own values, but not necessarily about the organization's. But as we thought that through, we realized that what drives people to be committed to anything, any cause or movement or organization, its goals and objectives, is that they believe in it too. And you can't know that unless you know your own values and beliefs. So the highest levels of commitment are when we are clear about our own values and beliefs, both to what we believe in, but also to what the organization believes in.
Okay, so I'm just trying to compute that and get really clear in my own head. So if I'm totally clear what my personal values are, but I'm not really clear what the organization means when they put their list of five value statements on the wall, but I do have a clear sense around ultimately what the organization's trying to achieve, then that works. If I know where the organization's going and broadly why it exists without knowing what the organization means by innovation or collaboration, for example, then you're still going to get pretty high engagement. Is that right? Have I heard that correctly?
Yes. What it I think suggests to us is that when I'm clear about what I value, what I believe in, what's important to me, and I walk into an organization, I can sense whether or not its values fit with mine. I may not see their values on the wall. I might not be able that nobody told me about them, but I can sense what they are because I'm clear. I know that. The analogy I sometimes use is imagine yourself, you walk into a room of total strangers. Within a few seconds or minutes of being there, you say, I belong here. I like these people. On the other hand, have you ever walked into a place where you say, within a few seconds or minutes, I'm in the wrong place. I don't belong here. How do you know that? The clearer you are about what's important to you, what you value, what you believe, the easier it is to have that kind of sense. And so people who are clear about what they value and believe in can figure out whether this is the right place for them, even if the organization doesn't publish its values and beliefs. But if I just know the organization's values and beliefs and I don't have my own internal moral compass, you know, I may do a good job because doing a good job is important to me, but, you know, I'm just doing a job. I'm not really committed to something because I don't know what's important to me.
I'm with you. That makes perfect sense. Thank you. Jim, a couple of perhaps quick-fire questions to finish up, if we may. I'm intrigued to ask you this one, actually. So I normally wrap up by asking guests, everyone on the show, what they think are three of the most important characteristics for leaders right now in the world that we find ourselves. So for you, would that be the top three from the top four in the last round of research, or has it shifted and would you say something else right now?
I'd add one thing to what we've talked about. So honest, competent, and forward-looking are on my list of the top three. Honest and competent, everyone seems, or the majority, vast majority of people say they look forward to my leader. Even though forward-looking has changed its position a little bit during this COVID period, I think it is the differentiator for leaders. It is the quality which differentiates leaders from individual contributors. And it's the practice which makes leaders unique, and inspiring a shared vision is what makes leaders unique from other contributors in the organization. And also that those add up to the top two, honest, competent, credibility as the foundation. The third thing I would add to this, though, was a lesson I learned from Don Bennett early on in our research in the 80s, when he was the first amputee to climb Mount Rainier. So that's 14,410 feet on one leg and two crutches. And I asked Don what was the most important lesson he learned from climbing that mountain. And he said, "You can't do it alone." He said, "If it weren't for my wife and seven kids, I wouldn't be alive today. And if it weren't for my team, I would never have made it to the top." And here's a guy who did something no one else had ever done before under highly adverse circumstances and being disabled in doing that. And yet he attributed his success, the lesson that was most important to him was that you can't do it alone. And I think it's another important and humbling quality for leaders is to realize you can't do anything extraordinary by yourself as a leader.
It really brings to mind the African proverb. I think it's an African proverb. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. It's very, very similar. Yeah,
absolutely. I love that.
And Jim, other than yours, what would you say is the one book that you've read that has really had a significant or perhaps the greatest impact upon you?
I would say that it's James McGregor Burns' book titled Simply Leadership, written in 78. And it was the book that in which the phrase transformational leadership was coined. That had a very powerful influence on me. James McGregor Burns wasn't a leadership researcher, he's a historian, but he wrote the seminal work that really contributed that terminology to the field and that perspective, the difference between transformational and transactional. I'd say that was the book that really propelled me into this. It just grabbed a hold of me. And if I got it off the shelf in my library, you'd see highlighted pages. It's yellowed. And, you know, I keep going back to it just to remind myself of how important and powerful that work was.
I've not come across that one, but if it's a recommendation from you, I should be heading over to Amazon and dropping it in my shopping basket pretty soon.
I think they came out with a new edition a while back, and you know it's sustained now over 50 years. It's been out there. It's a great book.
Wow. Jim, it's been an absolute honor and privilege chatting to you. I'm so grateful for your time. I know for certain everyone listening will get so much value from this episode. And as always, we'll put the links to your website, definitely the links to the book in the show notes. But thank you so much for your time and wish you and your family a very happy Christmas.
Thank you, Ben. Same to you and yours.
Wow, folks, what a conversation, what insight, and what learning we can all take from Jim Coos's lifetime dedicated to leadership research. I really hope you found that episode interesting. But most importantly, as always, I really, really hope that you're able to go away and take some practical action as a result of what you've just heard. And if you are getting value from the podcast, please could you do just one thing for me that I would be hugely appreciative of? Please do head over to Apple Podcasts, rate the show, and scroll down to the bottom of the show's page, and please, please leave us a review. It really does help, and it really does enable us to keep bringing you more and more episodes of the show. That's it for this episode. That's it for season 3 of the show. We'll be back with you before you know it for season 4 in 2022. Until then, enjoy Christmas with your loved ones. Take care and lead on.